And our special guest tonight, Lloyd Pye. Let's take a few moments and talk with him about the Crystal Skulls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd, weren't you on an old History Channel documentary on the Star Child, or at least you were part of something?
Absolutely. It's been on the History Channel, the Learning Channel, National Geographic Channel. It's been on about a half dozen of them. But it's always been as part of a larger hour. This one that's coming up in the fall of next year will be the first time that the Star Child has been treated to a full hour analysis.
That is fantastic. And
yeah, it's pretty exciting. It really is. It's great news. It's really what we've all in the field, I think, been waiting for a very long time, and I'm just delighted to be able to announce it and let people know that they can start really looking forward to something dramatic happening toward the end of next year. The testing will be in the mid part of the year, but the documentary, they have to film it, they have to cut it, they have to, you know, it's like preparing a book. It takes about a year to do a big one like this, and so we're just kicking it off, and we're very excited about it.
Still traveling, speaking?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just got back from Australia. You know, my wife Amy is from Australia, and mm-hmm. she hadn't been home in a while, so we went over there and did a speaking tour. And one of the things that we did was we went to the Nexus Conference. Nexus Magazine puts on a big conference every year down there, and we went to that one and were able to speak on the same program with the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, the famous
Mitchell Hedges
skull. So that put the two most famous skulls in alternative knowledge on the same program. So people really turned out, and we had a great time with the individuals that came there, but also was able very fortunately to get a private audience with the Mitchell Hedges skull, spend like a half an hour with it, and they do that. They sell those slots to people who want to pay the money, the extra money for it. And we were there. One of them came up that Bill Holman just said, you know, I want you to come take a look at it just for free. So we did. My wife Amy and I and her mother. And when we saw it, it's an amazing thing for those who are not really aware of what makes the Mitchell Hedges skull so special. Is
and that, it's named after an English adventurer, right?
Right. Well, it's named after his daughter who found it, Anna Mitchell Hedges. It's called that because that was her name, but she found it when she was a teenager. Ironically enough, this is so incredible. She was a teenager. It was her 17th birthday when she found the crystal skull. The woman who found the Star Child was a teenager of 14, 15 when she found it. So, you know, what are the odds of that? But anyway, we spent our time. Now, a lot of people want to be with any crystal skull because they want to feel the emanations from it that supposedly some people can feel. I was not part of that, nor was Amy or her mother. We didn't do that. We weren't able to experience that part of it. Maybe we're not open to it or whatever. But what we did do was spend our time talking to Bill about the physical mechanics of what makes this thing so special. And the average crystal skull, there's about 200 of them out there, other than this very special Mitchell Hedges one, which is just so perfect. And they are carved out of crystal of different kinds and different cloudiness, different levels. But this is absolutely clear crystal. It's amazing. Now, it does have occlusions and flaws and things in it, but this one, it's very, very remarkably clear. What makes it impossible is that when you normally cut a crystal, any kind of crystal, whether it's a diamond or any other jewel, the first thing you do is you line up the axis around which the crystal has grown. Crystals grow around like a seed, you know, and they have an axis. Well, this skull has at least three axes, and they argue that it may have a fourth, but the point is it's got three axes jumbled into it, and the thing has been cut against those axes, not along them, against them. Now, any other stone, any other, it should have just exploded. It should not have held together. And yet, somehow, it did. And not only did they were they able to cut it out against the grain of the axes, they cut the jaw completely loose. Normally, in a crystal skull, you just see some etching to represent the teeth, and the jaw is always a part of the block. You know, they don't the jaw doesn't articulate. It doesn't come completely loose like a real jaw does on a human skull. So this one is clearly cut out of the same. I mean, they took in some years ago, they tested it at Hewlett-Packard, and they found out all these things about it that I'm describing, and one of which is they found out that the jaw and the skull came from the same block of quartz. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And yet somehow they were, whoever did it, was able to separate the jaw completely from the main body, again against the axes, and it should have just shattered, but somehow it didn't. That's what they can't figure out. And then on top of that, my wife Amy used to be a dental nurse in Australia, and so the first thing she did was start looking at the teeth and comparing the jaw and how it fit with the upper teeth. And she said to Bill Holman, "Do you realize that these occlusions and the cusps of the teeth fit in against each other?" And he said, "No, I don't know what you're talking about." And so we in human teeth, you know, they have cusps and they have the little kind of valley down in the middle of the cusps, and those are called the occlusions. In perfect teeth, the upper and the lower teeth fit where the upper cusps fit into the bottom of the lower occlusions, and it's a nice tight fit. That is what this thing has. Somehow they were able to cut it that fine.
How could they
flat.
Do this? How they do this?
Well, it can only be done, I think, with lasers. I mean, you couldn't do that with hand tools of any kind, because it's not even as big as a human skull. It's a little bit smaller. It's kind of like the size of the Star Child, actually, in terms of the Star Child is the size of about a 12-year-old, or the size of someone about 5 feet tall. So it's a little smaller than average, but for someone 5 feet tall, it would be a perfectly normal skull. But we're talking something that's really pretty doggone small, and these teeth are small, too. And yet, the occlusions are cut into the cusps so that you have a perfect fit. And this thing is a miracle of engineering. What I like to say when I try to describe it to people is, imagine the pyramids as big as they are and as impossible as they are. This is the pyramids on a small scale that you can hold in your hand, basically. This is the complexity level, the genius level of the pyramids brought down to a human-sized scale. It's truly amazing. And by the way, one of the planes you can see in the rear of the head, when you get the light just right on it, you can see the whole axes of the plane. It's like two pieces of the quartz have been glued together almost. There's an absolute circular line of demarcation in the rear of the head. A big chunk, were it to get the right kind of pressure, get struck in the right kind of way, the whole rear of that head would just slide off right along the line of that thing. It's amazing how it was done. And they also say, get this, this is what impressed me too. I didn't see this, but they say you can take it out in the sun and get the sun to come on it exactly right in the rear of the head, and light will pour out of the eyes and the nose hole and will set paper on fire or any. It'll start fires. You know? That's amazing. And also they say that if you do light just a certain way up under the neck hole, that light will go up into the body of it and then band around through the zygomatic arches, through the cheekbones. It'll sweep around through there and come and light up the face. It's like those cheekbones have been designed as tubes of light. I didn't see that either, but this is, again, what they said would happen. We were just in a kind of a darkened room looking at it, so that the light, when he did shine it, made it really light up. But it's just an amazing, amazing artifact from nothing more than an engineering standpoint. Now, you add in the fact that so many people claim that they feel metaphysical things out of it. Sensitives and people like that swear up and down that they feel, they can feel vibrations out of it. And who knows, George? This skull could be the repository of all the knowledge in the universe because, you know, microchips are made of quartz. That skull could be holding more information than we can conceive of if we just knew how to tap it out. And maybe someday we will. But that skull is special. I mean, there's no, in my mind, it's like the Mayan calendar. It can't be there, but it is.
Does it look like there is a place for a key or anything like that in the skull?
No, there are two little bitty holes drilled in the back of it as balance points. It apparently is meant to balance on something so that it can rock back and forth with the movement of a breeze, and the jaw would then, if the jaw was hanging down, it would look like it was talking. It's got a design like that, but as far as any kind of like a key or something like that, I think somebody's just going to have to figure out how to put some wires on it and just pull it out. If it's in there. And I suspect there's probably, why would they go to that kind of trouble? Of course, they could have lost it. It was lost. It was buried in a Mayan temple. It could easily
have
been lost.
That's where she apparently found it.
That's where she apparently found it, exactly. But let's just keep in mind that quartz chips are how we run computers. They hold incredible amounts of knowledge. And if you had that whole head full of stuff, it just boggles. It's a universe of knowledge in this one skull.
There have always been rumors, though, that the father, that F.A., Mitchell Hedges, that he found this, but he couldn't tell anybody how he did it because it was so strange and unusual.
I've heard that too. That's one of the things that they talked about there, and that is possible. You just don't know because they came out with the story that she did it, and they stuck with it. There is that rumor, but he's gone, she's gone. They took it to their graves. I don't know who else would know. Maybe there is somebody out there that knows the truth, and they might come forward with it. But at this point, I don't know how we're ever going to prove that.
What if the skull was like a projector? And somehow, if you could get it turned on, it could show you and reveal maybe some of the secrets of the universe. Wouldn't that be something? So maybe there is information in it, like a computer chip, but that through the eyes, it kind of like shows you a hologram or something.
This was not mentioned, George. I like this
idea.
That's
my theory.
I like that idea. That's another one. It could be. That's a great way to. I mean, the idea of the chip was mentioned. This was not. It's first I've heard of it, but I think it's a great idea and a great possibility.
Let's talk more about your hominoid research for the rest of this hour, if we can, Lloyd, and then we'll take phone calls with you next hour as well.
Okay.
You've still been working on, when I first met you and on the radio,
right?
Back in
St.
Louis.
You were in St. Louis,
doing my local show.
Yeah, you had that great bumper music. I want everybody to know he had the great bumper music even then. I used to rave about it even then.
Everything You Know Is Wrong. I remember the title of that, and I went searching for you. I had heard you on with Art, and I said, what a great title for a book. Everything You Know Is Wrong. It was about how what's up is down and what's down is up, and you've never stopped since.
Right. Well, that book put me on the map, and it's been very good to me over the years. I have to say that, and a lot of people, like 30,000 people, have bought that book, so it's done very well. But we let it go out of print last year because I knew I was going to be revising it sometime this year, and I'm about one third of the way through that revision. But you know, with 10 years of new work to catch up and incorporate in, there is an awful lot, and now that I've had this delay with the documentary deal beginning to shape up and form, I'm going to be even more delayed. I don't think that the revision is going to come out until 2010, probably now. But I want everybody to know that I'm working really hard on it. I apologize for letting it go out of print because I've got an awful lot of people mad at me over that.
We will know in January if Sci-Fi wants to pick up our television program as a regular series.
Uh-huh.
If they do, would you be willing to come on with the Crystal Skull and the group and come on and do a show with us on that?
Well, I can't do it with the Star Child because that's going to be exclusive to the documentary that's being done. That's part of the deal why they're putting up so much money. I mean, they're putting up, you know,
what if we promote the documentary for you?
Well, I don't know. You'd have to talk to them. I can put you in touch with Matt Richards. He's the producer and see how he, you know, what they're willing to do. But I know that he's going to have to work through the production company. I mean, through the channel in England. I'm not supposed to say which channel it is.
I know, I understand.
Say which company it is here in the States that have partnered with them on it. But they're big, trust me.
Okay, get them in touch with us at least.
If that's something that you guys want to do, I'd have absolutely no problem with it. And also, too, remember, I can do anything relative to my human origins work, relative to hominoids work, but it may be that the Star Child is off the table for until this documentary is shown.
What do you think of Michael Cremo's work?
Love Michael Cremo's work.
You two
love
are
Michael
very
Cremo.
Similar.
What a great guy. He's just one of my best friends in the whole field, and every time we're together at conferences, we spend some time together, and he's just a terrific guy. And it's funny because we really have some basic disagreements about humans. You know, he says that we go back for millions of years, which is, you know, the basis of belief that from which he operates. But and I believe that our genetics say pretty clearly that we're only 200,000 years old max, and that we, as we are about 40,000-50,000 years old. But
you believe we were altered. We were
genetically engineered and recently. I think we're a very recent addition to the planet. I think that our genes make that clear. And I think that the genetic engineering that we have, especially our second and third chromosome, the main argument there is that all higher primates have 48 chromosomes, 24 from the mother, mm-hmm. 24 from the father. Humans alone among the higher primates, have 46. Now, that's a huge loss of chromosome. And, you know, chromosome material, genes, all of that.
We're up on the pecking order, but we've got less. Huh?
Exactly. So how could that be? Well, the truth of it is we still have them. We still have all 48 of them. But second or third if we were a primate, have been stuck end to end together to take up only one space, meaning that something wanted to have sex with us and reproduce with us, but they only had 46. So they had to find a way to let us keep our full genetic component so we would be what we are, primate, but be able to have sex and reproduce with them. So they fused our second and third chromosome to go along with that program, and that can only be done in the lab. And I mean, it's just clear as a bell. Anybody looks at our genetic array can see that there's just, you know, you will hear arguments from science that, well, nature does that because it's done it in more than human beings. It's done it in other animals and plants. Well, yeah, but all of those are domesticated animals and plants, and really that's all we are, is a domesticated animal. For whoever created the domesticated animals and plants, they created us too. And I think that that's one of the hallmarks. But we also have 9 other chromosomal, what are called flips. Parts of our chromosomes relative to chimps and gorillas have been just flipped end on end, just taken out, turned over, and put back in for whatever reason. And that's what makes us us. So, the evidence for genetic manipulation is just blindingly clear to anybody that wants to open their eyes and see it.
Now, does a fish have the same amount of chromosomes as we do?
No, everything has different amounts.
Different amounts. Right.
Different amounts, yeah. And plants can have outrageous numbers. They can have layers of chromosomes. It's all very different, but as far as we're just within the primates, the things that are closest to us, the things that we're most like, that's the 46, 48, but you can have many more.
But will all fish have the same amount of numbers?
No, everything's different. Yeah, just like every animal's different. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's amazing. Stay with us, Lloyd. More to come on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Lloyd Pye, but when we come right back, we'll talk more about his research into the unexplained on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd, why is it so important for us to determine where we came from, who we are?
I don't think we can chart an accurate path into the future till we know where we've come from, what we are, what our purpose is, why we're here, who put us here, all of that. How can we begin? We're like just like wandering around, like, as Amy says, headless chooks, which is a headless chicken here. You know, we're just wandering, and the results just look around us at what we're doing to the planet and everything. We don't have a purpose, a direction. We haven't charted a star to follow, and until we do that, till we know where we've come from, what we're about, why we're here, we just can't move forward efficiently and effectively. And I think it's important for those things to be cleared up once and for all. What do you put 10 years into something like the Star Child Skull for, if you don't really have a passionate belief that you're serving, you know, the better good of everyone by it? It's a hard thing to do. I mean, it's a really hard thing to do. And I wouldn't do it if I didn't believe that it was very important for us to chart that accurate course into the future. I won't see it. You probably won't see it. But if we don't make those kinds of decisions, if we don't figure it out and start at least, tacking in the right direction, who knows where it's all going to end? I think it's going to end badly.
It very well could be. What do you think of Zechariah Sitchin's theories about the Sumerians?
I follow his theories very closely, and I believe that there is a lot to it. He may not be right in every detail. I say that all the time because he's just one guy doing an enormous amount of research. But I think he's closer to the reality of what happened in the past than any mainstream scientist working today. Whatever they're putting out, that's all garbage. I think Sitchin is much closer to the truth. I think maybe we can get a little closer to the truth, but definitely there were, I think, a high alien superior civilization on the Earth in the past, and I think some aspect of that created us and put us here for some reason, and we are yet to figure out the reason, obviously. We don't even yet accept that that's how we got here, but through my work and the work of others like me, we can move us in that direction. The Star Child is certainly going to give us a huge leap in that direction. And then once those theories are accepted as plausible and real, then we can begin, I think, to move in that right direction. And that's the importance of the Star Child Skull, of the documentary, of the book, of all of it. And that's why it's important for people to make themselves aware of this, because this is the thing. This is the wedge. This is the lever that we're going to be able to apply to all the ignorance that's out there and is accepted now as true. Truth.
How about von Däniken, his work?
Well, I think he's the grandfather of us all, and we all owe him a huge debt of gratitude for what he's done. Same thing, not right in every single thing that he did, but he certainly did a lot of very good work. And again, one man working this whole brand new field, you're going to take some wrong paths. You have to. And we all stand on the shoulders of giants. That's the way it works. And I applaud him and Sitchin and all the early pioneers of this field. They did great work.
Lloyd, you continue with your work. It hasn't ended yet. You're still doing more research. You've got more things to do. Let's talk about some other things that you plan to do to get to the bottom of all of this.
Well, obviously the Star Child is the main thrust right now. I'm going to continue to do my work on human origins with the research that I'm doing for Everything You Know Is Wrong, and I continue to go in that direction. I want to continue my work with hominoids because I think that's just as important as the alien UFO question, because it's all together. If we are indeed put here, genetically engineered and put here, then what are called the prehumans? Those skeletons are there. Those fossils are there, and they have to be explained. Well, if you accept that hominoids are real, then the prehumans are taken care of. So all the work that I do, it seems disparate, but it all fits together seamlessly in the end. That's how you make the picture clear to the future, to those that don't understand it. You show how the prehumans are not humans at all. They're actually hominoids that have walked out of the Miocene era, which is from 25 million years ago to 5 million years ago, walked out of that whole 20 million year period on two legs, right to today, around the world, every continent except Antarctica, four different types, the Hobbit being one of those types.
Mm-hmm.
the little kind. And so then that leaves us without a place, human beings without a place in the fossil record. And so it's just added proof that we are genetically engineered and recently put here. And that's the whole thrust of my work and what I do, and I'm going to continue to do that. And this documentary should hopefully give me a much larger platform to get, you know, to get these messages across to people. And eventually somebody, you know, somebody in the right high places are going to have to listen. They're going to do it unwillingly, but it's just we're going to be able to cram it down their throats. And I think this documentary and the test that the Star Child is going to go through, the 454 life science testing procedure, is going to prove it at a level of scientific accuracy that just can't be argued with. And that's what makes it exciting, and that's what makes it so valuable.
Now, you said something about the hobbits. You said the little ones.
Right.
Does that kind of implies that there are big ones?
Yeah, there are four kinds of hominoids, George. There's the big kind, the Bigfoot Sasquatch kind, 7 to 9 feet tall, 700 to 1,000 pounds. There are two basically man-sized kinds. There's the Alma's kind, which are 5 to 7 feet tall, 300 to 500 pounds. There's the abominable snowman kind, which is very unique. They're the most primitive of the four.
The Yeti type?
The Yeti type, exactly that. And then there's the Sadapa, Agagwi, and now Hobbit type. They were known as Sadapas and Agagwis before, but they're found in the band of jungle that circles the equator around the globe. And they were always known to be in Indonesia and places like where the Hobbit was found. And the people on the island say these are just the little hairy people that live in the jungles. And that, you know, that's what everyone there agrees that these beings have existed alongside them all the way. Science, of course, doesn't want to accept that, and so they've done everything they can to make it seem like the Hobbit is just some kind of a dwarf, weird, mal-shaped, malformed human being, just like they try to do with the Star Child. And yet there's been some recent proof in looking at the wrist bones of the Hobbit that shows very clearly that they're not human. I mean, I've got that picture on your website as well, so people can see that analysis of those wrist bones, and which shows clearly that the hobbits are not human beings. They are much more like primates. Therefore, I argue that they are nothing more than the pygmy type hominoids that have been well known for decades.
How many different creatures do you think there have been on the planet in terms of species that have been altered or genetically manipulated?
I think that all of the so-called domesticated plants and domesticated animals have been genetically engineered to make them domesticated. They have all signs of work done to them that nature just doesn't do. Now, like a chimp or a primate, chimp or a gorilla, rather, those are just natural beings, you know, natural animals.
To this planet.
To this planet. But a cheetah? Now, a cheetah is clearly a genetically engineered animal. It's an absolute cross between a dog and a cat. It's got dog and cat fur on its body. It's got a cat body, but it's got dog feet because to run at the 70-mile-an-hour speed that a cheetah runs at, it can't make its turns on cat feet. It has to have dog feet. It has to have permanent claws stuck out there and big, heavy pads to make, like, track shoes on it, or it can't make its cuts. So, and cheetahs get dog diseases, and they get cat diseases that are specific to dogs and specific to cats. They are very, very fragile. The sperm of their males is like 40% motile. That's not, nature doesn't do that. Nature doesn't produce those kinds of problems. A cheetah is clearly a designed animal, and there are others as well. Like house cats, but cattle, sheep, goats, all of those, according to Sitchin and according to the Anunnaki, these animals and these plants, corn, wheat, all that, were created to, quote, I love this phrase, give the gods their ease, meaning to make life easy for the gods. They created everything they needed here to make their life comfortable. And that's where suddenly, remember, all this happens within about 10,000 years. Suddenly you have this explosion of domesticated plants and animals And then we don't make any more. They just no more appear. We can't create any. Nobody creates any. No more new ones come. But within that 10,000-year period, it seems like all of them appear. How does that happen naturally? Well, it doesn't. It's just stupid to pretend that it is otherwise. And these are things that I talk about already in Everything You Know Is Wrong in the old version, and I'll just expand on that in the new version when it comes out.
Interesting facts about a cheetah. From standing start, a cheetah can reach 45 miles an hour in 2 seconds.
And 70 at top speed.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
Well, and not only that, it's the easiest big cat to domesticate. They were domesticated in all the great temples and of the kings of Egypt and all over in Asia, the Chinese court. They're very easy to domesticate. It's like they're built to be servants of humans. It's like they're built to be hunters for humans. You know how we have birds of prey that go out and hunt for us and bring it back?
Right.
Cheetahs can and will do the same thing. You take them out, they'll hunt for you and bring it back.
Without eating.
Yeah, and you give them a piece of it, and that's their reward, and it's a teamwork thing. So, they are our like shotguns, basically the primitive shotgun. Just send them out there, and they'll get it and bring it back to you.
Lloyd, what has your life been like with all these various investigations? Hominoids, Star Child, has it been turned upside down?
No, it's hectic and it's challenging, but I really love it. I don't make a lot of money. I got to tell you, anybody that you just don't make money in this field. You know that. You know it as well as I do.
Yeah.
It's not a way to make money. It's a way to find emotional satisfaction in what you do, and I certainly get my share of that. I love what I do. It isn't very rewarding yet, but maybe it will be. But I'm not in it for that. If I was in it for money, I'd have been a lawyer. I like doing what I do. I really enjoy it.
You love the speaking, too. I can tell just in the places I've seen you.
I do. I love, getting up in front of people. I just like making it clear. I like, explaining it to people and letting them see and come up to me afterwards and say, I never understood this before, but it now I understand it. That's why I want, let me just, if I can, again, plug the book again. Please, everyone listening, if you can, make yourself aware of what I'm talking about with the Star Child. Do it. Get the book if you can. Just go to the website if you can't do that. The book's easily available through Amazon. Again, if you want the hardback, go to www.bellappbooks.com or call the 800 number, 1-800-992-4821. It isn't going to make me rich, but it'll make you rich in knowledge and understanding of this incredible event that's going to come down the pipe this year, and you will be prepared for it. You'll be able to discuss it with your friends and your enemies and the people that make fun of you. You're going to be able to rub their noses in it. And I really urge you to make yourself aware, understand it, understand the arguments, understand why the genetics are going to work. The pages, the pictures are there in the book on the website for you to show and prove what I'm telling you. Just make yourself understand so you can explain it and make them understand it.
Why do you think scientists kind of shy away from what you call searching for the truth?
Because they just simply don't want to have to say they're wrong. I've got a book. I really would like you to contact a guy named Christopher Hardiker. There's a book called The First American that came out last year. You want to hear a story that'll curl your hair about science, this'll do it. In the Valsequillo, and I'm not sure that I say this right because of the Spanish, but the Valsequillo Reservoir, back in the 60s, George, they started discovering artifacts that when they dated them, they dated out to 250,000 years ago. This is near Mexico City. 250,000 years ago, worked stone tools. Now, this flew so badly in the face of the Clovis first theorists who say that the first Americans, the first people to come to the Americas, had to come at the end of the last ice age, and the Clovis points were the first and all that. Imagine from 12 to 15,000 years ago as the upper limit for when mainstream science would accept that human, type people were here, to 250,000 years ago minimum, and possibly more than a million years ago in this one area. And all the things that they do, that science does to squash this down and not let this come out, known in the 60s, mind you, and they succeed for 35 years. And then a woman who was there named Virginia Steen McIntyre comes on a documentary in the late 90s, 30-some-odd years later, and just the roof blows off, and they have to re-squash it down again from having her come on, and her career was ruined by being involved in it and everything. This is an incredible story of scientific malfeasance at the highest level. It's called The First American. The guy is Christopher Hardiker, and your audience would be absolutely enthralled by this guy's story, by the Valsequillo story. I know I was. It's a great book. I would recommend it to anybody. Just like the Upright Ape, although that's a lot more difficult reading, The Upright Ape by Dr. Aaron Fuller. He's the one that found that the Miocene apes, there were indeed upright walking Miocene apes through the entire Miocene. That's a much more scientifically technical book, and I don't think it would be as much fun to read as The First American. That's the way I write, where anybody can read it and enjoy it.
Lloyd, isn't it amazing how so many past civilizations discuss through their tablets and their writings and their symbols extraterrestrial presence? I mean, it is so cut and dry.
Yeah. Absolutely. So cut and dry and consistent across all of those cultures. You would think that with that much anecdotal evidence coming out of the historical record, that one scientist would look at another one and say, you know, maybe these people knew what they were talking about, you know, instead of just, well, we choose not to believe it, so they have to all be complete morons and not know anything about what they were talking about.
Dramatic research on your part, and I hope everything falls into place.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the support you and the Coast to Coast staff have given me over the years, including Art. It's been a long decade for all of us, but we're really close to fruition here, George, and I'm happy to be able to announce it tonight and to share it with you and all of your listeners.
I can hear it in your voice.
I mean
there've been moments of frustration, but this time I hear it in your voice that you feel
relief is not even the word for this. I mean, can you imagine having someone call you up and say, we're willing to put in whatever it takes, get us a number, we want to do this. And I get the number, and it's $200,000. And I call them back, and there's a big gulp on the end of the line. And they say, let me get back to you on that. They go out, they find some partners that are willing to come in on it, and we've got a deal. It's amazing.
Well, and they're going to do it right, the right
way.
Well,
the main point is, look, if they're going to put up that kind of money, you know they've already studied the book, studied what I do, and they know it's a good gamble. It's a good risk. It's not even a gamble. They know it's going to happen, or they wouldn't do it. Nobody would put up that kind of money if they weren't sure, it was as sure as I am, that it was going to happen. It's going to happen.
It'll happen. Stay with us, Lloyd, because what's going to happen next, when we come back at the top of the hour, we'll open up the phone lines for you. Lloyd's got a couple websites linked up at coasttocoastam.com, lloydpye.com, P-Y-E, and then starchildproject.com. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.